The following previews are of Graphic Audio Productions, rated for mature audiences due to scenes of intense violence and sexual situations.
From the creator of James Axler's Deathlands comes an all-new series, Outlanders. In the aftermath of the Russian-American nuclear holocaust of 2001, America became the Deathlands. Now, two centuries later, a new order emerges to inflict its rule from within fortified cities. Beyond the walls are the Outlands, where a fragile freedom remains. Once a magistrate, fearsome warrior of the New Order, Kane discovers a secret that has damned humanity since the dawn of history. Now, banished to the Outlands, he joins forces with Bridget Baptiste, flame-haired keeper of the Cobaltville Archives, and Grant, brother-in-arms and weapons specialist. In the place that was once called New Mexico, Kane finds the first hidden clues to humanity's future.
Point Bird, status.
Under fire, a Vulcan phalanx turret.
Copy, take it out.
Roger. Hang on, we're taking her into the canyon.
Do you know why I have had you brought here?
No.
Because you belong to me. From the day of your birth, you have belonged to me, as did your father.
Who am I to Baron Cobalt?
I offer you the chance to be one of my chosen ones.
Chosen for what?
To hear the truth. Are you ready to hear the truth, Cain?
We are old. When your race was wild and bloody and young, we were already ancient. Your tribe has passed. All of the achievements of man are dust. They are forgotten. We stand. We are.
They're on to us now. They've got some kind of weapon. I don't know what it is, but it's nasty. They almost got me.
Yeah, they're trying to outflank us. The little fuckers sure are light on their feet.
Here they come!
Go, go, go!
Get down!
Catch the ride from the start. Outlanders number one, Exile to Hell. Available in May 2006. Welcome to the new reality. Welcome to the Outlands.
Outlanders 1, Exile to Hell, will be in travel centers and truck stops throughout North America starting May 2006. Or call 1-800-670-5220 to reserve or download your advance copy of Exile to Hell. For your convenience, this information is also printed on the cover of this book.
Despite the efforts of law enforcement from the U.S. and other countries, Panama is still a pipeline for illegal drugs. Mac Bolan, his brother Johnny, and lady-fed Keely Ross are out to plug a tributary of that pipeline.
There's the objective.
It's a cocaine refinery, all right. I can smell it from here.
So, we're clear on the plan?
Crystal.
Let's blow it up.
Okay, move out.
Raven Flight, move in! We are under fire!
But their ultimate target is much bigger than one coke factory.
What is happening, Mr. Sun? Why can't you stop these attacks?
Mr. President, please. I have guaranteed your safety unconditionally. No one can find you here.
Maxwell Reed, would-be president of the small Caribbean nation of Isla de Victoria. His plans for a violent takeover of the elected government are bankrolled by a coalition of international crime lords with their own plans for the island.
We have a problem. Somebody is trying to bring us down.
We don't know who they are, Mr. Brody.
There is a way of finding out.
Which is?
Capture one of them and squeeze him until he sinks.
The search for Reed takes Bolan and his colleagues from the steaming jungles of Panama to the luxurious resorts of the Bahamas.
Borodin is somewhere in this hotel. If we can get Borodin, he can lead us to Reed.
This isn't going to be easy.
Is it ever?
Johnny, Keely, hold up. I'm going to try to clear a path.
It's your dime. Talk to me.
We have a problem.
What?
Mac's gone.
Executioner number 309, Flames of Fury, part 2 of the Org Crime Trilogy. Coming in May 2006 from Graphic Audio.
Executioner 309, Flames of Fury, will be in travel centers and truck stops throughout North America starting May 2006. Or call 1-800-670-5220 to reserve or download your advance copy of Flames of Fury. For your convenience, this information is also printed on the cover of this book.
And now, our feature presentation.
Graphic Audio. A movie in your ears.
Graphic Audio presents Simon R. Green's Deathstalker Honor. Narrated by Richard Rowan. With performances by Terrence Acil Ford, Nanette Savard, Colleen Delaney, Anne Flosnick, Nick Sampson, David Coyne, Kate Torrey, and Mort Shelby. Graphic Audio sound design by Dan Smith. And directed by Richard Rowan. Episode 4, No More Secrets. Diana Virtue, now only occasionally Jenny Psycho, was hard at work again in the computer record section of the newly established Esper Guildhouse in the Parade of the Endless. Guildhouses were springing up on planets throughout the Empire, now that the Esper Underground finally felt secure enough to come out into the open. The houses existed to train, succor, and politicize Espers, and to provide sanctuary for those in need. Diana didn't feel at all in need of protection or succor, and she had no interest in Esper politics, but she did need access to the Esper Underground's extensive computer files. Over the past few centuries, the Underground had built up a massive database on the theory, practice, and history of all Esper abilities, a library of knowledge far more extensive than anything available anywhere else. The Espers had always known more about themselves than their masters ever had, and Diana had a lot of questions she needed answered. Though if the Esper Underground had known exactly which question she was pursuing, they would undoubtedly have moved heaven and earth to keep her away from their computers. So, Diana hadn't told them. The door eased open just enough for a servant's head to peer carefully in. People in the guildhouse had learned the hard way not to interrupt Diana when she was working, without very good reason. Her Jenny Psycho persona could still erupt occasionally, if she was annoyed enough. Diana was always very apologetic afterwards, and sometimes even helped to clear up the mess, even assist the injured to the infirmary. As a result, people walked very softly around the infamous Diana Virtue, and had as little to do with her as possible. Which suited her just fine. In fact, Diana was a lot more stable these days than she let on, but it helped her to have everyone sufficiently intimidated that they wouldn't think of asking awkward questions. She turned slowly in the swivel chair and gave the unfortunate servant at the door her best daunting glare. He paled visibly and had to swallow hard before he could deliver his message.
Beg pardon for disturbing you, most revered senior Esper, but the head of the house asks again if you would be so good as to speak with him concerning the nature of your current research.
No, I don't think so.
Diana had ruined her throat and vocal cords, screaming in the terrible detention cells of Worm Boy Hell, the Empire's notorious prison for rebel Espers. Diana could have had her voice repaired, but had chosen not to. It made a useful psychological weapon, and if what Diana suspected was true, she was going to need all the weapons she could muster.
I'll speak to the head of the house when I'm ready and not before.
It's just that, You've been tying up our computer resources for 3 weeks now, and the list of people waiting to use them is now so long that some have been asking whether they should make arrangements for their descendants to inherit their position on the list.
Tell them patience is a virtue. Anyone who doesn't feel particularly virtuous is always welcome to complain to me in person. Provided they've made a will first, and their family knows an undertaker who likes a challenge.
Well, can I at least persuade you to attend regular mealtimes? It's snatching 10 minutes to wolf down a hurried meal in here, when you happen to think of it, can't be good for you. You hardly ever leave this place. You would probably sleep in here if there was room to fit in a cot.
Thank you for your concern. Most appreciated. Now get out of here before I decide to turn you into a small hopping thing.
The servant's head disappeared, the door closing quickly between him and the threat of sudden bodily transformation. He wasn't sure she could do it, but he didn't feel like finding out the hard way. There were stories. Diana smiled slightly. She knew she shouldn't take advantage of her reputation like that, but chances for humor had been few and far between in her life of late. He was quite right. She wasn't eating properly or often enough. But the work was so important, she often couldn't drag herself away until her body forced her to. She had to find her answer before someone sufficiently powerful arrived to stop her. She sighed and turned back to the computer terminal before her. The monitor screen buzzed impatiently, waiting for her to put something useful on it. She was using an old-fashioned keyboard, infuriatingly slow and tiring, but she couldn't risk setting up a direct link to the computers through her comm implant. It would have left her vulnerable to all kinds of things. Diana Virtue was investigating the single greatest mystery of the Esper Age, the nature and origins of the enigmatic Mater Mundi, our Mother of All Souls. No one knew exactly who or what the Mater Mundi was. Ask 100 different people, and you'd get 100 different answers, all of them equally vague. Some said she was the Uber Esper, the single most powerful Esper mind ever created. Others maintained she was a group of senior Espers in the underground working together, hiding behind the mask of a single identity. To some, she was the god of the Espers, and those whose lives she touched were considered to be saints. They tried to make a saint out of Jenny Psycho, but it hadn't taken. To those who weren't Espers, the Mater Mundi was a dangerous unknown, a threat and a menace all the more disturbing because its nature was so unclear. Diana had her own reasons for distrusting the Mater Mundi. The phenomenon had manifested through her once, uncalled for and unexpected, boosting and expanding her Esper abilities far beyond anything she'd ever been capable of before. She'd blazed like a sun in the dark pit of Worm Boy Hell, binding all the Esper prisoners together so they could break out of their cells and fight for freedom. Hundreds of Espers had been drawn into her focus, guided by her augmented will, fused into a single, unstoppable force. The Gestalt hadn't lasted long, but while it did, Jenny Psycho worked miracles. Afterward, she remained far more powerful than she had any right to be. She'd convinced herself that she was the chosen avatar of the Mater Mundi, the permanent agent through which the Mother of the World would manifest herself. She believed she was the chosen one, the leader destined to bring her people out of slavery. She was wrong. She found that out the hard way on Mistworld. When she tried to summon the Mater Mundi's presence at a vital moment, and nothing happened. People died around her, and she could do nothing to save them. Later, the Mater Mundi manifested through the rogue investigator Topaz, and she combined all the Espers of Mistworld into a single, hugely potent force. And Jenny Psycho discovered, to her great dismay, that she wasn't who she thought she was. At the end of the rebellion, the Mater Mundi had pulled together hundreds of thousands of Espers in cities all across Golgotha. She hadn't bothered with a focus then, just slammed into their minds and used them to do what was necessary. She blazed through the mass Esper mind, wild and glorious and frighteningly inhuman. Again, it didn't last, but while it did, it swept away all opposition to the rebels with an almost contemptuous ease. The Mater Mundi manifested just once more for the finale, possessing Jenny Psycho just long enough to teleport a handful of useful players into Lionstone's court. Diana should have felt grateful, even honored. Instead, she felt used. So she set out to find who or what had been using her and why, only to run into a brick wall.